Hi, I'm Nicole Ferraro, and this is The Divide, a podcast from Light Reading exploring the ongoing digital divide, why and where it still exists, and what needs to be done to get people everywhere connected to reliable, high-speed internet. Today, I am joined by Brian Newby, who is the Broadband Program Director for North Dakota. We discuss the state of broadband access and the digital divide in North Dakota, and we get into some of the details of the state's Broadband Equity Access and Deployment, or BEAD, plan, including how the state is preparing for its forthcoming BEAD challenge process, and more. Brian, welcome to the podcast. Thanks so much for joining. How's it going?
It's going great, Nicole. Thank you for having me on. I'm as excited as a kid to be on.
I'm glad to hear it. I am excited to hear about all things North Dakota broadband. So first, let's start back with how long have you been at the helm of things, all things North Dakota broadband? Was there a fully functioning broadband office before you came on board? And what have your main objectives been since you started?
So I joined the broadband program office and kind of as it was being created in March of last year, so almost a year. And the creation of that office came about as was result of the capital project fund grants that were being made available and the NTIA grants that were being made available. And so in order to start fleshing that out, the state hired a contractor who did a really good job, but he was a contractor and he was in Texas and he did his best to kind of start laying the foundation of the program. He's moved on to greener pastures, I guess, but he was kind of overlapping when I was here for a while and carried out some of the CPF stuff up to the point of award. So did a great job there. But my focus has been early on was just getting us ready, getting a contractor to really a consulting group. We're using Guidehouse as a consulting group for all of our BEAD and DE, all our NTIA grants. And so we were launching that. Right when I came, we had selected them. They started in April. They've been terrific. I can give you all kinds of details on that. So I was focused more on getting our BEAD and our DE documentation ready, all our grant things that were required. Less so on CPF, but then when I became really just an office of one at the end of last year, I've been focusing on CPF as well. And we're at a point now where we have grantees who are actually turning up projects. And so that's been good. And so now we're getting into compliance aspect of that.
Okay, very cool. So just to stick with a couple of things that you brought up, CPF is, of course, the Capital Projects Fund that's distributed through the U.S. Treasury Department that was allocated through the American Rescue Plan. I believe North Dakota was approved for, what, $45 million for broadband deployment through that program?
We were. And, you know, North Dakota is an interesting state in that the legislature only meets every other year. So, yeah, this was happening at the time the legislature was in session. They had called a special session in 21 because of redistricting, because after the census. And at that time, awarded all of the capital project fund money to, that you said, $45 million, to our IT group for the broadband program office. That was really what was going to start it all. And the thing is that when they were back in session, by that point now, BEAD had become a thing. And so they were having not quite buyer's remorse, but they were certainly questioning whether they needed to spend that money, the CPF money for broadband, and instead maybe reallocate it. So what kind of came of that was anything that had been allocated and ready to award was going to be awarded, but we had awarded $37 million, and that was basically what had been bid on. I mean, we didn't have projects we hadn't given out yet. So it wasn't like there were other things that we wanted to fund. There are things we'd like to fund, but there was nothing else on the table at that time. So anything that hadn't been put out to bid was basically taken away and moved to other departments. So we're at $37 million is basically where we are for the grants and CPF.
Okay. So that remaining, what is it?
$8 million-ish.
$8 million. Yeah, I was doing the math in my head. Math is not my strongest suit. But so that $8 million, that's no longer available for broadband.
That's right. It moved over to CTE, which is more technical training. Okay. So different part, different program. And our $37 million, it goes, let's see, I think 6, 8, 10. I think we got 11 grants out of that. So it's about 2,100 locations. And so it was a good program, but we didn't have a round two. $37 million was a pretty good start for what we need to do as we head into looking at BEAD, though.
Okay, cool. So we're going to talk more about BEAD certainly in a moment, but I want to just take a quick step back and see if you can tell us a bit about the digital divide in North Dakota. If you have numbers of how many locations you're still trying to serve, unserved and underserved locations, and what are the main barriers to deployment and adoption in your state?
So from North Dakota standpoint, we're really in a good place. We have about 350,000 locations total, and somewhere around 6,000 that are unserved or underserved. And that 6,000 includes these 2,100 that we're turning up with CPF. So the carriers here, they're a lot of small co-ops. They're ISPs that are independent. They've done a great job. Midco is really kind of in the eastern part of the state, and they've done a good job as well. And I would say that our carriers have treated service, I like to say, kind of as an art. Mm-hmm. So the majority of, certainly on the co-op side, the telco side, it's fiber. Midco has some fixed wireless. So we really just have, I mean, a smattering of locations. We're about to start the challenge process, and we expect you're going to be looking at about 4,500 locations. Now, obviously, the big challenge is they're probably the hardest to reach locations.
Yeah.
And, I look at some of what we saw in the CPF, one of the CPF locations, and had somewhere around $38,000 a location. So that's pretty huge. And that's to get fiber to all these locations. So one of the concerns I have when we get into BEAD is, is it really worth it for a lot of carriers? You know, like can they afford the free money? If you think of it that way. So that's going to be one concern, because what I was explaining a minute ago in the legislature, they basically passed part of a law. They didn't really pass a law about it, but they put it in some description about how we're going to only have $37 million. And they said the preference should be always on fiber, which of course is what BEAD is as well. Mm-hmm. But there are cases or times when fixed wireless is an important piece of the portfolio. So we really are going to have to be looking at what we're going to do with locations that just aren't bid on. And that, I fully think that's going to happen. So, I mean, you bring up a whole different issue to me, and that is that what does it mean to be done? And I've been trying to stress this a lot. Like anything, this program, when you get into 56 states and territories, is political under governor's offices. And so there's going to be a lot of people who are going to want to wave a flag and say mission accomplished. What does that mean? Because we think we can be the first to be done. Is done mean when you've allocated your money? Done mean when you've actually implemented all the service, which would be 5 years from now? Does done mean when you've had all your proposals approved? So however you want to measure that, you know, I think we can be first at having all our locations completed, but many people will already say that they were number one by then and finished well before we do that, I'm sure.
Sure. And I guess, you know, if you went by the NTIA or the administration standards, the goal of BEAD is internet for all, right? So that means every location has access to the internet, and every location can technically afford and adopt internet access. So, I haven't spoken to anybody who thinks that that idea is going to come to fruition exactly, 100%. But the goal of BEAD and its companion, the Digital Equity Act, I guess, is to get as close to that as possible. I want to come back to that in a little bit, but let's zero in on BEAD and talk about what your state is getting. You guys, I believe, were approved for $130 million through
That's
BEAD.
Right.
Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. And as we're talking right now, your Volume 1 BEAD proposal is with the NTIA awaiting approval, right? I mean, maybe you'll get it in between us talking and this podcast being edited and published. But what's that process been like, pulling that Volume 1 together? What sticking points have you needed to resolve with the NTIA? And I guess, do you have any hopes on when you're going to get that approval?
Yeah, we're being told is really soon, but we hear that from a lot of states, that we were hoping to start our challenge process March 1st, and we will be ready March 1st. Other states were looking at that same time, and they don't have approval yet. So I think realistically, we're probably going to be mid-March. I don't know that. They haven't committed to a day. And as I get into that, I guess I would say that the first thing you said about 100%, you know, internet for all, that concept, it's a little bit like laundry. You know, you're never done with laundry when you think about it.
Never.
And so, it's so same way that I don't think anybody can actually be 100% done just because there's new locations that are coming up. But our push with NTIA has been, what happens if we don't have people bid on certain locations and we don't have anyone with the proper technology that would hit the speeds that they want? Alaska has asked this question, for instance, and we don't get an answer. And it's very frustrating because so I think that if they've committed to not approving a single plan that doesn't show 100% coverage, they're not doing that. You know, the ones that are being approved so far, there's no way they could with a straight face say that it's got 100% coverage. So that being said, our hold up points, just like everybody else, is you submit it and you go through back and forth with curing. They come back and give questions. We haven't really had that many. I think on the volume one, the couple of the hangups that are still out there, and I think we've resolved one, was how we were going to use speed tests. The UCLA is the company that does a lot of the approved speed tests. They're really good at what they do, but a lot of the data that we are getting from UCLA can't really be used, or we're really kind of having to fight to use it. If you think of it, fight being a lowercase F, maybe a strong, that's a little strong word, but we're trying to suggest why we can use it. They've got some formula already. The NTIA does that. If a carrier can prove that 80% of the time they're getting 80% of the speed that they offer. So it's kind of a watered down thing. So using some UCLA data that might be good, isn't really going to be effective in trying to create a challenge. And I can kind of get into that some, but so we backed off that a little bit and we thought we'll use some of the UCLA data as kind of back pocket information if we get a rebuttal from a carrier. So that was kind of an area where I think we just decided it's not worth continuing to try and figure that out. Okay. So that's one. The other is that we would like to use state parks. We consider state parks community anchor institutions. And NTIA is needing to be convinced of that a little bit. And we have a lot of state parks. You know, North Dakota is a real big outdoor area in the summer times. Cold, really cold in the winter, but it's fantastic in the summer. And so we're still working on that. And we may have to give up on that. We're hoping that we can use those as community anchor institutions as well. Those are kind of the final two hanging points, I guess, to get our document approved, I believe.
Okay, gotcha. I do want to hear a little bit more about the UCLA issue. Does that have to do with, you know, proprietary mapping stuff with CostQuest or what is the issue with using that data?
Well, so for us, they have a kind of a subscription you can get, like a year's worth of data. And so we did that, and it's a rolling year. So it's really good data and it's fantastic. But because of the kind of the limitations of this 80% of 80% and also your 60 days, you have to have, I think it's within 60 days, the data you use has to be specific to that particular location is all that can be used. Okay. So it's like, it's all this great information that will help us if somebody challenges a location, let's say a fixed wireless location, and the fixed wireless provider says, no, all of our data shows that we're doing this. We could maybe use some of the UCLA historical subscription data to come back and go, you know, au contraire, but, and that might be good, but just trying to start out of the gate and using some of that to designate locations as underserved, I think it's going to be too much effort. And it kind of gets to what is the main goal here? So obviously we're focused on, you know, citizens, residents, all having the speed that's required, at least 100 over 20. But the other thing that we want to have kind of as a project value, we have a few project values, but one is we want to be pro-carrier. So I feel like if the carriers don't sign on to what we're doing, it's kind of worthless. And so I'd equate it to being a marketing director and the salespeople not buying in. Right. So I don't think we want to poke a bear with a particular location or group of locations just because of the technology. We'd rather wait and see how the process plays out in the challenge process.
Okay, understood. So you're ready to start that challenge process as soon as you get that approval, right?
Yes, we're having, in fact, yesterday we had our kickoff webinar with the carriers. We're having three more this month still. In fact, one later today from the day we're having the podcast, you're recording it, but we have tribal governments, then city, local governments, and also nonprofits. So we're going to have all those done by the end of the month. We're getting them all, starting the process of registering. So within a few days after we get approval from NTIA, we'll start the challenge process.
Okay, very exciting. So I want to go back to something you were saying about if the free money is basically affordable for some of these carriers in some of these areas. One of the programs that was supposed to help make the free deployment money more accessible for carriers in hard to reach and low income areas is the Affordable Connectivity Program. Another sort of batch of free money for carriers, but a program that enables people to afford broadband service. And the BEAD program has a low income plan attached to it. So the concern is, if the ACP does not get refunded, how are state broadband offices going to address that requirement? How are ISPs in these harder to reach low income areas going to afford the deployment and network upkeep costs if people can't afford service? So how are you guys looking at the ACP issue? And do you see any, is there available BEAD funding to set up your own, ACP-like program? How are you guys looking at this, especially as the person who has to come up with the plan that explains how you're going to address this?
So you're right, because as the BEAD plans were all being developed, the ACP future was kind of becoming cloudier and cloudier. But I think it's also important to know that, ACP is a relatively new program. Mm-hmm. And so it wasn't even mentioned in the NOFO that I believe, the Notice of Funding Opportunity from NTIA. And so one of the things that we've heard from our carriers, we've talked to them, they haven't seen that much adoption of ACP in North Dakota. They feel there's probably better ways to reach low income and subsidized low income users, I guess. One of the aspects they have a concern about, what I've heard anecdotally, is they almost have to set separate tiers of service. So how do they justify the actual cost of 100 over 20, let's say, to someone who could afford it more, when that's also the price point for a $30 kind of subsidy? And, how do they create those tiers? So the other thing is that, as I've learned more about ACP, the majority of ACP goes to wireless providers or wireless customers. So I think 55% go to wireless. A lot of that prepaid. I think there's a lot of layers to the onion on ACP that I don't understand. I think there's layers a lot of people don't understand. And I think we're seeing the headlines as to how people will lose it. I saw some AARP discussion today. That's out there. We also know from talking to other states as well, kind of the scenario behind the scenes with NTIA is NTIA will tell people it's all up to the states to decide, but it's very prescriptive on everything that we're doing. That how we respond is prescriptive. They have to approve our challenge process before we start, our challenge process outcomes. They have to approve our selections. So it's kind of portrayed that it's up to us, but it's really not. And so ACP is no different, and the low cost option. And so a lot of states have pushed back and said, well, they've kind of done what we've done. In our discussion, we're saying that we're going to let the carriers dictate that. We're going to review it. We're kind of going to do a mathematical formula and kind of trust that they're going to create this and it's going to be part of their bid. In some states, the NTIA is being very directive and saying you must put in a dollar amount and that dollar amount should be $30. So we're kind of pushing back on that at this point. In our documentation that we've had so far, we didn't want our words to hurt us, be used against us, if you think of it that way. So we support in our plan an ACP-like program. We were careful not to say we support the ACP because I think it's a natural progression. Kind of you even said it, that I think if the ACP completely goes away, which it looks like it will, that the states will be somehow expected to take their BEAD money and turn it into ACP. So when we've talked with our carriers, they have an interest in wanting to know if we have money left over to somehow create a universal service fund alternative. And I told them we'd be open to that. That is if we have money left over. I think our issue is going to either be we have just enough money to hit everything. That's probably best case scenario, or we have we hit everything and we actually have some leftover money, which, well, that, the reason I say that's not necessarily the best case scenario, that probably means a lot of the locations we finished up with have not fiber, but they're probably fixed wireless or some other technology. And then we have some leftover money, and that very well could be used for a universal service fund or something like that. So that's kind of remains to be seen, but we've kind of just stepped on the side on the ACP. We didn't sign on to any letters or any of that. I think it's just let people play that out because I don't think we know enough to know.
Okay, understood. And it sounds like is the affordability piece a concern for your state or less so?
I guess, I don't know. I mean, I would say probably less so because it's not the top of mind thing. We know that each carrier provides their own. The underlying issue there is we have five tribal territories in North Dakota. And, you know, a lot of times when you talk about BEAD in general, but it seems to be more this case when we talk in the tribal territories, you talk about broadband and people equate broadband to their mobile phone, which isn't the scope of BEAD. And that definitely seems to be the case when we look at some of the territories within our tribal communities. Right. So definitely the $30 is a big deal in those communities. And also that we have some, you know, very rural areas. Definitely it's helpful. But where it's helpful, it's really hard to get your finger on. I mean, I just keep stressing 55% being cellular. And I don't think that's published or publicized enough for people to really know what's behind it. So I don't know. It's just for us, it's kind of like ACP is going to play out on its own, whether we're involved or not. And however it plays out in the next few months, we will then do what we can to fill in with our dollars. But the putting a dollar number in our proposal until we're like told it won't get approved unless we do, that we're not going to do that.
Got it. Okay, understood. So I guess so I can set you free in a couple of minutes here. Why don't you tell me a bit about, you know, obviously the challenge process is coming up, but once you get that Volume 1 approval, that's going to kind of, you know, accelerate things and let you get on to the next stage. So what do you think the next, you know, year looks like for you? And what does success look like for you once you get this BEAD program going?
Yeah, so from BEAD, you know, I think it's really having all those identified locations agreed upon on what they are. Because, you know, there's this belief, and I think it'd be with every state, that you don't really quite know how many unserved and underserved locations you have. That's really been the case because of the mapping and all that. And it creates this perception of like there's a closet that's just jam-packed, and you open the door and locations just came falling out of the closet all over the place, and you don't know how many locations you have. You're trying to pick them all up and count them as more stuff falls out. So having the number of locations everybody buys into, when we think we know what that number is, we think we know where they are, obviously. So then addressing all of those, that would be success. And for us, if we don't have, because I think you're going to get into, I don't know, in the old days, you might call them spurs, but I don't know what they call them these days, but you have little remote areas that might only be onesie, twosies, things off. And so after we go through the first round, we have the carriers all are, most of them are board members for another kind of an entity, Dakota Carrier Network. And so we've explored the idea of maybe working with them after the first round and maybe Dakota Carrier Network kind of becoming a broker to try and get some of those locations that weren't bid the first round done. We're going to look into that and see if that's possible. That might speed things up. We're hoping that by this time next year, we have all of them tagged. And we're having contracts and we're putting out awards. That means the proposal 2 has to be approved. That probably is going to be, you know, who knows, April-ish, May. And then from there, then we got 365 days. But I think we're probably looking at success of having them all tagged by at the end of this year or maybe January, February next year.
Okay, excellent. Well, I'll leave it there for now. I look forward to seeing how all this plays out, and I'll let you get back to closing the digital divide in North Dakota. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you for having me. Great to talk to you.
Thank you again, Brian, for joining me. Thank you as well to our producer, Pierre Landriau, for making this episode. Be sure to subscribe to the Light Reading Podcast for more episodes of The Divide, as well as interviews and insights from the Light Reading team. Thank you for listening. We'll see you next time.